Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time again for another episode of the All Over the Map family. As we follow one family and their kids, they make it around the world in search of their forever home. With the couple who's been on a crazy journey for 6 months now here, come in, Michael and Caitlin Domner. Where are you at?
Hey, Paul. We're in tip of the world today.
You're tip of the world here. You're getting a little muffled on me again there. Here, let's see if we can.
That's not bad.
Yeah, there was a feedback on our end, too. I don't know what it was.
All right. Well, hopefully.
Is that any better?
I think it's better now here. Well, let's remind everybody that you've been on a journey now for how long? For 6 months, it seems like?
Yeah, since July 1st. So what is that? July, August,
yeah,
September,
six
October,
months.
November, and December. Yep.
So how do you get from Apple Valley, California, this nice, peaceful suburbia, on the edge of greater Los Angeles here? How do you get from Apple Valley to Antarctica?
Very carefully.
Not the way we took. That's the least direct path.
Fairly circuitous route. Yes, definitely.
Well, when we first stumbled upon you, you came on a show and we're talking about this adventure. And I said, what a great podcast this would make as we track you along the way. And get you to tell the tales that you see from the road here. And it seemed kind of fantastic, really, when you talked about it in the beginning. What has it lived up to that fantastic image? Has it been? Let's talk about what it's been and what it hasn't been. As you left off, you had an imagined vision of it. What was that imaginary vision? What did you think you'd see? Let's start there in 6 months.
Oh my goodness. I think one of the biggest pieces that we had going into it was just nonstop action and adventure all the time,
right?
Seeing new things every single day, going to new cities very frequently. Just kind of that picture perfect how I envisioned vacation travel prior to leaving, right?
Yeah.
So just go all the time.
Right.
And I think one of the biggest things that we've realized is that that's exhausting.
Yeah. In fact, your bodies gave out a couple of times along the way. I'm thinking of the Galapagos in particular. You're at this heritage world site. You're at this bucket list place, and you're spending most of the time leaning over into a bucket.
Yeah, that was a different kind of bucket list adventure. Yes, and I think we just realized, like, no, this is not vacation. This is just daily life abroad. We are nomads and we're traveling, but work has to get done. School has to get done. Laundry has to get done, right? All of those things that are just normal everyday activities, even if you're in a beautiful location like Ushuaia, Argentina, or the Galapagos, you still need to schedule time for the normal. Even when you're in an extraordinary place.
And I think we're still kind of learning that lesson here in Ushuaia. We've been here for, I think, about 10 days now. And it's just been, we've still been kind of had that like go mentality a little bit. And yesterday was a day we literally just, I don't even know that the kids got dressed yesterday. They were still in their pajamas like all day long, sitting on screens. Caitlin and I were getting work done. We're in this amazing dream destination, but at the same time, just stuff has to get done. So we just took the day and got stuff done.
For most of us, we live in the ordinary. We live in the everyday routine of our life, wherever that routine is. It might be at a spectacular place. I was curious, you know, when you went to Antarctica, there are people, this is their everyday life. This is what they do every day. And do they stop and smell the roses still? Do they notice the penguins outdoors, or is that just that's just normal? They don't see it. So for most of us, we're caught up in the ordinary, the routine, and that's the idea of travel. As you get out of it, and there's almost a, I don't know, is there a drive, or is just a guilt, or we're spending so much money, or we've got so little time, but there's an urge to do it all the time. Do you guys still have that urge to do it all the time?
Oh, I think we actively have to fight that almost every single day. Like every time that we talk to somebody, whether it's meeting somebody here over lunch or meeting our neighbors and talking to them, everybody gives us a list of, oh my gosh, while you're here, these are the things that you have to do. And, right. and I feel like that's been true in every place in the world, right? We've made friends, we've met people, made great contacts, and everybody gives us like their, oh, these are the top three things that you've got to do while we're here.
Right.
Realizing, you know, if we get three things from 10 people, that's 30 items. We're only going to be here for 10 days. So
yeah, exactly.
we'd be pretty hard pressed to get all of them. So so I feel like that's something that we're constantly, I wouldn't say battling, but
aware of, yeah.
trying to moderate. Yeah.
What do you do to moderate? Can you do nothing and not feel guilty? Can you just sit and watch, read a book or sleep or watch TV? I don't know if you watch TV in foreign countries because it's in a foreign language, but you know, I that ordinariness that we do of just day-to-day living, which we drop when we're on the road. How do you do that? Do you have to force yourself? Do you have to schedule it, or do you just let it happen? We're not going anywhere today.
Yeah, I feel like we've done it pretty organically. It's just when our bodies are starting to crash, we have we call it a screen day. So the kids get to play on screens and mommy and daddy get to do work on laptops. And I would say there's probably a lot less filler in our lives than normal Americans' lives. We don't have television. We had
to watch
set
TV.
Up,
we don't yeah. watch sports every week. We don't have a lot of just time killers like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the normal day to day duties that I have that we have. You don't have to water the lawn. You don't have to pick up the mail. I don't know. I'm trying to think of things that I have to do every day that takes time. I don't have to take out the trash. There are certain activities mm-hmm. that we have to do every day that eat up a bunch of time too. Do you have other routines that take the place of those? Do you have to, because you got to get ready where you're going, or you got to do this, or talk about some of those things. What routines have you added to your lives now?
Yeah, something that struck me that you were saying earlier, how you know, most people are just kind of stuck in the, and I'm doing air quotes here, but you can't see it, normal yeah. Routine, like going to work, going right. to the grocery store, right. you know, a lot of those things, and realizing that we're living our lives kind of outside of that. I mean, we do a lot of the same things, right? We still have to take out the trash, we still have to do the dishes,
right.
We're living in a house, so we still have to make food.
You got to make your bed. You got to do other things. Yeah, right.
I would say a lot of those similar daily routines are still there, except for when we were on the cruise ship. The cruise ship, everything was handled for us.
Yeah, that's right. Right. Well, that's some that we talked about. That that's a fairy tale existence. You know, that can only last.
We can't
so long.
Do that all the time. But
and I will say sometimes the routines are harder because we're not at home. So Michael and I love to cook, but when we're cooking abroad, we've got one saucepan, one pan, a really dull knife, and maybe a couple of bowls. And like that, we just don't have our usual spread. And then you have washing machine, like a little tiny washing machine that we can fit in about 20 pieces of clothing at a time.
With three kids, we literally have to do laundry once a day.
Constantly.
Wow.
Yeah, but there's no dryer. So Michael's just sitting like clipping socks to the mobile that hangs above the washing
of
machine.
Course, yeah.
And you're like, yeah, this would be a lot simpler if we had our extra large Maytag washer dryer set where we could just go from one to the other and do a week's worth of laundry at a go. But yeah, it's very different having to balance those daily activities in a different environment.
I think too, we're less tied in a way less and in a way more tied to our calendars too. So when we were at home, like everything was on our calendars, our work calendars. We have our Google calendars, basically. If an appointment's not on there, it doesn't happen.
Right. Absolutely.
Here, I feel like instead of looking into the future, it's much more like we wake up and we look and we're like, what are we doing today? Like there's less, I don't know, to an extent, I feel like there's less looking forward to see like, what does this week look like? And it's more like, what are we doing today? I feel like it's made us live more in the moment, in a manner of speaking. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I always liked about traveling is that it gets you in the moment and there's an agenda for the day. We've got to get from here to there. We've got to see these three things. We've got to get ourselves packed and ready or unpacked or whatever. There seemed to be always a schedule that sort of took over that doesn't happen in day-to-day living. I'm not going to do anything today. I'm just going to lounge around this weekend here. Or, I've got to run 47 errands. I got to go to the drugstore. I got to go to the hardware store. I got to fix that front door. I got to do all these things here. Is there a routine? There must be some, you must have it down to a science now, how to pack and unpack, how to move. Do you set yourself up a certain way every time you go somewhere? Like for me, when I'm travel, I can never leave my bag. Everybody, so other people have to unpack and put it in something, a dresser or a drawer or something. I found that difficult because I would forget things. So I learned to live out of the bag. Do you guys live out of the bag?
Michael and I have different philosophies about this. I prefer to just leave everything in the bag. Michael prefers to unpack everything. And some places allow us to, and some places don't. So some have dressers, some don't have dressers. But yeah, you mentioned the packing. I will say that is the piece that, like, that's my onerous activity. Every time we have to move, I'm like, oh no, packing. Because whenever we end up at a spot, everything just sort of explodes. We've got our two big bags of luggage. Each person has a little carry-on, and then we each have a backpack. So we are not traveling light. We've got 12, 13 pieces of luggage. Right. And every time we stop, like, it looks like everything just threw up all over the space. And then somehow we have to wrestle all of the chaos back into 13 bags again.
Yeah.
And if we're on an airline, then we have to be really strategic about it. So
we have to have no bags over 50 pounds. So we have to distribute weight as well as bulk. And yeah, that complicates things a lot.
Yeah.
So if you got any tips on how to do that, any mommy blogger tips here on how to, particularly with kids, how to keep them organized and how to make it, because you're going to do this, you've done it a lot and you're going to keep doing it. So this is probably the most important survival technique of your whole existence is how to pack and unpack.
And survival. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think two things really there that we've gotten down. One is using packing cubes. And these are, they're basically like internal bags that you stuff individual things for that then you put into your luggage. And essentially it just helps you keep things separate, right? When we don't use them, it ends up just being like stuff everything into the luggage as tight as you can and then zip it up around it as you sit on it.
Right.
But when we use the packing cubes, it's much more like, okay, this is the socks and underwear packing cube. This is the shirts. This is the pants. And then you just kind of lay those neatly into your luggage. When you open it up, when you get there, it's not all like a wrinkled mess that just explodes out when you open the luggage. So packing cubes are one thing that we've decided are invaluable when we're traveling. A second one that it has been nice is having a scale, like a little hand scale to weigh the bags. So that way you're not like guessing like, that feels like about 50 pounds. And then you get to the airport and they say, oh, it's actually 53. Now you've got to redistribute between your, five bags. You've got to redistribute weight. So having one, it's just a little hand scale that you basically loop it around the luggage, lift it up, and it tells you how much it weighs. And that, because we travel so much, we've pretty much maxed out our bags at this point because of all of our treasures and souvenirs that we've bought along the way. The individual scale has been invaluable as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So talk about treasure. Talk about stuff. If you looked at my house that I bought in 2000, it is overstuffed. I'm always having to try and shed stuff away, like shedding weight in the new year. I'm going to lose 20 pounds. I'm going to finally clean out that closet here. How do you clean out your closet? How do you not accumulate stuff along the way?
Yeah. And we have like hoarding tendencies back home. We really loved all of our little trinkets and stuff. And someday we'll use this. So packing back our home was very much a challenge. But now there's sort of this necessity where we have weight limits, we have payment limits, and I mean bag limits. And even if we wanted to sometimes pay for extra weight or pay for an extra bag, sometimes it's just not an option. Here in Argentina, the domestic flights are really strict about what you can and can't bring. Otherwise, it gets shipped as cargo. It's weird. But at the same time, we're seeing these amazing works of art everywhere we go. Our friend Charlie actually is storing our driftwood Jesus that we found Tulum, Mexico.
Yeah. You got to take the driftwood Jesus with you. I can't miss this. Yeah, right, exactly.
He was like 3 feet tall and
carved out of an incredible piece of wood. I mean, it was an amazing work of art. So the artist took a piece of driftwood and carved it. It was a great shape. I mean, it was just a gorgeous piece of art. So we decided to buy it. I mean, it wasn't inexpensive to buy, but then it cost almost as much to buy it as it did to ship it to our friend to hold on to it for a couple of years until we got home.
Hold on to this for a couple of years. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So actually, some of our biggest and heaviest pieces have foster families back in the States. Right. So we got a large soapstone Mayan calendar carved in Belize, and I shipped that off to my sister. And so the bigger pieces we just had to ship home directly. But we're still carrying one of our big luggages is at this point mostly dedicated.
It's almost completely
to souvenirs, like the textiles and the fabrics that we got in Guatemala.
It was kind of fun though. This last where we're at here in Ushuaia, we made a couple of friends that have kids, so the kids play and we hang out with the adults, and we were able to take all of our kind of crazy souvenirs out. So we had like a table runner and like napkins that are all hand woven from Guatemala, works of art, like paintings we hung up on the wall. We had them all over for kind of a day after Christmas dinner party.
Yeah.
And we got to decorate with all of our cool art pieces, which is going to make packing a little bit more crazy this time, because usually that whole bag just stays together and we don't open it. Yeah. But it was fun too, because it kind of allowed us to make our space, right? So we got to make it our home, and really just it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it felt like Christmas opening up all of those little packages that we had stashed away. So that was kind of my Christmas, because we couldn't buy extra gifts for the kids. So we just unpacked the gifts that we had already purchased. Yeah. And for the kids all made crafts for each other. And so it was kind of low key. But so as we've been accumulating those new souvenirs, we have to shed other stuff. So we've all given away at least 3 to 5 pieces of clothing that we thought we would need. All of the kind of shampoos, conditioners, and hair products, because we're a very hairy family, like most of those have been gotten rid of, because anything that's liquid is heavy and we need to get rid of weight, not right. space. So all of our consumables, we've gone through most of our nutritional supplements at this point. It's like, how can we get rid of stuff that we thought was essential back home to make room for these new treasures, at least until we can get home? So when we head off to Asia, we will probably just have 2 completely empty, full-sized luggage pieces that we will strategically start packing out and filling with more souvenirs as we're traveling. But yeah, we didn't really budget for growth as we were going. So we had to do a literal like ounce for ounce trade-off whenever we buy something.
So that whole idea of shedding, we did a show on that. I think that's just a fantastic idea. We all think, well, I got to take this. I got to have this. I got to have this jacket. I got to have this shampoo. I got to, And then along the way, you got to shed it because you just don't need it. You get tired of carrying it, or you want to add things to it. So something's got to go. That's something that doesn't happen in day-to-day living when you live in one place. You can just fatten and grow. So I think that's been a fascinating thing that I would have never thought of, because you're constantly finding new opportunities and new things and constantly reevaluating and repacking. Do I really need to carry this sweater anymore here? Do I really need to have that shampoo, that thing that I couldn't live without? How do you live with holidays? You just went through the biggest one for most of us here in Christian Western America here at Christmas. How do you celebrate Christmas on the road?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a wrestling match this past week or so, because, I mean, we've joked in the past, right, that we're taking our kids on a really big social science experiment and we don't know how they're going to turn out. Right. And one of those holidays are kind of those key touch points in our psychological development where we get to come together as family and celebrate our values and create meaning of this life experience. And so doing that in a completely different context without family, fortunately, and this really was the grace of God, Michael mentioned, we made some friends in the apartment above us. And so we got to talk to them, like, what is Christmas like in Argentina? And they told us that they celebrate Twelfth Night, which is Christmas Eve. And that's kind of a really big celebration for them. And their kids stay up until midnight waiting for Papa Noel to arrive. And so our kids immediately latched onto that idea.
Because they wanted to stay up till midnight.
Yeah. Oh, we're in for that.
And so Christmas Eve, we made our fancy dinner. We kind of looked at traditional Argentinian dishes, and we did like a rolled chicken breast with ham and cheese in it. And we did a rolled cake with like vanilla sheet cake and vanilla pudding and strawberries. And yeah, Christmas Eve was mostly just making gifts for each other. And so Cora did a paper panda for Bradley, and Jackson did like a mosaic coloring sheet for me. And I did like watercolored little name plates for each of the kids with their favorite animals. So like each of us was just making something memorable. And actually that experience of just, we're all on a level playing field. It's not like mommy and daddy have the cash and they get to buy presents and the kids just get to receive. Like none of us could buy anything for anyone. All of us were stuck in the same boat of having to just make something with some paper, some glue, some colored pencils. Cora had some glitter. So she made me like a snow globe out of a hand sanitizer bottle. Like just kind of zany little things that I will treasure. Like those are my treasures. And it was that experience of spending time together and being artistic together and not having to race around Walmart the day before Christmas and like pull her hair out trying to buy 10 more people, 50 more things. And it was, so Christmas Eve was just really laid back and lovely. And I really want to see how I can take some of that home. But there was also a lot of homesickness. Like, again, I just got this wave of, what are we doing? Why are we so far away? What are we talking about? We're looking for home. Home's back there. Like, why did we leave? And so, just calling our family, doing video calls. We had already shipped our presents off to them back in Guatemala. So we got to watch them open them and put them on and explained the meaning behind each thing that we had purchased for them. And so tried to bring family in. And then Christmas Day, we went for a 5-hour hike to a glacial lake.
Wow.
We really didn't do much. Like we opened up the little crafts that we had made and we ate some breakfast and then we headed off on a drive into the mountains and just spent the day in nature. And
I feel like what I've really appreciated is in today's world, and we have been caught up in it just as much, but really everything is focused around things, right? Like getting presents and there's a word that I can't come up with in my mind. Materialism. So just everything being focused around kind of that the buying experience, the giving of gifts, just that materialistic feeling. And this Christmas, I feel like we really got out of that. We didn't, it wasn't about all the things that we received I feel like the kids saw it as well. One side of them was disappointed with it a little bit, but the other side, I really do think that it's good for them to see that we can have a Christmas without spending money on gifts and it being all about the giving and receiving of things that, we may not even look at 2 weeks down the road. And it felt very cleansing, I think.
I was thinking of that same thing, my own Christmas here. I have a 7-year-old grandson, and so he's coming into that age where he wants 87 action figures, and he wants all these Legos, and he has a specific, whereas his brother, who's just turning 2, he's happy with one toy or whatever. He doesn't know.
The cardboard box.
Yeah, he's happy with the cardboard box, actually, more than the toy inside. So, and I looked at him this year and we all went crazy. I don't know what we were all thinking, but he got like tons. I mean, like dozens of action figures and things. And he's counting them. And I'm like, oh my God, what are we teaching this little kid? You know, so next year, if we gave him 30, we got to give him 32 next year or 33, or he'll be disappointed if he only gets 27 action figures. And I thought, oh my God, we're just endlessly giving him. And because there's lots of, you know, his grandparents, our two sets of grandparents and family and cousins and everybody else. And I thought, I don't know, this is not good. For the first time in my life, I stood back and looked at that because I was into it. I actually went and bought a few more the day before. I thought, oh, this isn't enough. It didn't feel right. I'm going to give him a couple of more here. And then I'm like, what was I thinking? He's ripping them open. He won't even remember what they all are. But he's counting them. He's counting them. How many did I get?
This makes so much more sense if we could just take all of the presents and then like spread them out over the next 12 weeks. You get to open one present a week for the next 12 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. There's a different way to do this. I was thinking to myself, I don't know if we've got the right plan in place here, but that's the way I grew up. It was the more the merrier. It didn't matter what it was. It was how many you got.
It is. Yeah, it's a very different philosophy down here. And I'm not going to say we're not going to probably go back to the traditional American style of Christmas whenever we are back in America. But
no, but I think the experience was good, though, even if it's not how we always do it. I think the moderation, like everything in moderation. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. All right. So one other thing that strikes me as we come to the end of this reflection here is something that you said offline after we talked the last time, because you are coming back to Apple Valley at some point in time in February to sort of regroup, rebrief, replan, and relaunch as you go to Asia or Africa or someplace. I don't know if we'll talk about that in a moment here, where what comes next. But you said the thing that I always smiled, I saw as a kid. We moved a lot as a kid. I talked about this on the show. Every couple of years, my father got transferred, and so we moved. And every time, the people wherever we left, they would say, usually around the holiday, when are you coming home again? And I moved to California in 1980. My parents stayed behind for 20 years back in the Midwest. And every year, when are you coming home again? And I kept saying to them, I am home. That's not home anymore. When do you stop? When do you let go of that connection to Apple Valley? Or maybe you never do. Maybe that's always home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think we're coming around to the notion that home is where the heart is, if we want to be trite about it, but home is where your people are, right? So our people are still in California, Michael's family, my family, and they're talking of moving. His sister is going to be going to Texas, and there's change and in the wind. So I think as long as your tribe is there, that's it's kind of what you associate with home. But to your point, we're technically homeless at this point. Exactly. We have renters in our home on a year lease. So it's not like we get to go back to our old house. We have to find a different domicile while we're in California. And
I think that'll be an eye-opening experience as well, because I feel like if we could just go back to our own house, be comfortable in our own bedroom again, you know, have all of our old stuff, I feel like that would be more of a homecoming. Going back and finding a place to rent, and yes, we'll get to see friends and family, and that'll be amazing. But I think not going back to our home place of our home.
I don't get to sit in my chair again. I don't get to cook with my pots and pans again here.
Yeah, so it'll be, I think we'll still be nomads. It's just we'll be nomads in the land of our birth, which is, it'll be its own experience for sure.
Yeah. Even, I think that'll be even more kind of eye-opening because I talked a little bit of, a couple months ago about having the experience in Buenos Aires where like being an outsider, like feeling like I'm watching everybody go about their normal life around me at a coffee shop and just feeling like I don't belong. And that'll be, I don't know if it'll be even more disturbing doing that in the place that I associate with normal, quote, air quotes again, normal life.
Right.
I don't know what to expect. That'll be interesting.
Well, the last question for this episode is what's next? You've done this magical journey where you got in a van and drove across the country and then you crossed the border, which few of us do, and then you kept going. And that's what was so unusual about this, all the way down through Central America and South America, down to the point where you can't go any further. to literally to the edge of the planet, and then jumped off to this magical place, Antarctica, and came back. You know, what comes next? And I asked that in three realms. Where do you physically go next? Do you go left? Do you go right? Do you go to Africa? Do you go to Asia? Do you go to Europe? Do you go to, I don't know, pick any other place, Australia, someplace in between? Where do you go when you've sort of gone as far as you can? And then the second question is, how do you get used to just seeing a regular place again? How do you just go to a city after you've seen Antarctica? How do you keep them down on the farm once they've seen Paris, as they used to say in World War One? You know, how do you ever go back to just seeing ordinary things again once you see something extraordinary? And there are more extraordinary things. You could go to the Himalayas, you could go to the middle of Africa. There's lots of other similar wild things to do. But how do you do all the other stuff in between? Are you always thinking back or looking forward to the next wow moment?
Yeah, I think 2022 is going to be an interesting year for us. So immediately next, we're going to continue in Argentina here for about the next 30 to 45 days.
We had planned on going to Chile, but...
Yeah, Chile doesn't want to let the kids in unless we vaccinate the two oldest children. And I don't know that we want to do that while we're down here in Argentina. And then even if we do, it's do a vaccination, wait 3 weeks, get the second vaccination. Then we have to wait 14 more days before they can go to Chile. So it's probably our time will be up before we even finish the vaccination realms anyways. So I think probably staying here in Argentina for the next 30 to 45 days, seeing a few more places. We're talking about going to Calafate, which is another just gorgeous place here in the south, in Patagonia, and just enjoying nature.
And then our friends went up to Bahia Blanca, and they're like, you could join us. So we might go to the beach in Argentina, head up north again.
So we'll probably do a couple weeks in the mountains and then a couple weeks on the beach in Argentina. Hope it's their summer down here, so maybe go catch some.
So you're literally going to hang out like it is. Kind of is a home, or a quasi home, a could be home. You're going to slow down and just wander around without an agenda.
Yeah, I looked at our passports, and we literally, I think by February 7th, we have to be out of Argentina because they only give us 90 days when we came in. So before early February, we have to leave Argentina, which is interesting because that's the first time we've even come close to maxing out our time in a country like that. So the next 30 to 45 days will be here in Argentina. After that, we're definitely going to come home for somewhere between 1 and 3 months. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We've talked about potentially doing a few cities in the U.S. for a month, just doing like 30 days in Asheville and then 30 days in Atlanta, 30 days, I don't know.
Because that's going back to finding our forever home. We know that it's near the Appalachians. We just don't know where exactly among the Appalachians it's going to be. So somewhere from Georgia to Virginia or even up to New York, like, in that range. So we may just decide that it's time to, and part of that is fed by my grandmother who lives in Delaware, is ailing, and her longtime life partner is about to pass. And so it just made me realize, like, okay, we can travel the world at any time. We may only have a few more months to spend with her. And so just recognizing there may be a reprioritization of the travel schedule as we prioritize the urgent, which is family, and then continue with the journey after.
That's but I think even point. our normal life will still be extraordinary in a manner of speaking.
So, it's not going back to the ordinary. You're not going to go back and just get a 9-to-5 job and put the trash out on Monday here again.
But I think it does give us a chance too to reprioritize work. I mean, scattered internet accessibility here in South America has definitely slowed things down on the work side. So having just high-speed internet consistently and a place where we can kind of call ours for a month at a time and have a home base, which we've talked about doing internationally as well, but would be nice. So we may take the opportunity to do that for a few months while we're in the States. The next physical location outside of the States is definitely going to be Asia. So either Philippines, Thailand, somewhere there. We had wanted to go to Australia, but they're still completely shut down. We have a friend who was on the Antarctica cruise with us, and it's like mandatory quarantine. And then somebody else on his Qantas flight popped positive for COVID. So then he had to redo quarantine. It's just, it's a disaster. I feel like Australia and New Zealand are they're handling this a completely different way. But
yeah, well, they're very hardcore about it. There's no question, particularly New Zealand. That's what they've been known for. You know, nobody in, nobody out. And that's how we'll keep it contained on this island here. Well, I just wonder what comes next. You know, Caitlin dropped a bombshell here. She said, well, we know the forever home is in Appalachia. I didn't know that last week. I thought it could be in Ushuaia.
It's our strongest hunch right now.
Well, okay, so the other hunch was Chile, but Chile won't let us in.
Dirty rats.
So I can't believe the Andes Mountains range. No, we do love the Andes as well. Like, we have really loved being here in Argentina and seeing... Patagonia has been amazing, and we've been on the dry side, and that's why we're really excited about seeing the wet side over in Chile, because that's kind of the flip side of where we want to be.
But at the same time, that there's so much more to the world. Like, I mean, we haven't been to Asia or Africa or Europe within this trip, and there's so much more that we could find. Like, we may find somewhere in the Philippines that we just absolutely love.
Yeah, we've had so many friends who have told us, like, the Philippines, Thailand, Bali. Like, you're gonna go there, and you're just gonna want to set up life there, like, just
or maybe it's a tent in Uzbekistan.
I don't know about tried a yurt in Virginia.
A yurt, that's what I was trying to remember.
It was nice for a couple nights, but I don't know if we could live
I don't think we're yurt people.
You're not yearning for a yurt. Oh, because those are the nomads that traveled, you know, endlessly on the caravans. They just set up their tent wherever it was. It could be a caravan through Saudi Arabia, or a caravan, what do they call it, that Marco Polo went across from Europe to Asia, the great caravan routes. Mm-hmm. It could be that. You could
Yearning for the yurt life. I think that's got to be a book title for somebody.
Well, it'll be interesting to see where you set up your tent and where you finally call home. I wonder if it's just wherever you are when the roulette wheel stops. I said about the pioneers as they came across the country. Did they really pick Kansas? Did they really pick Nebraska? There's nicer places ahead.
That way about Argentina, like, we sort of fell backwards into Argentina and are going to stay here for like 90 days. So we had no plans of making Argentina our home in South America, but it's definitely the closest we've come.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, home is where the family is, and home is where you want to stay. And right now, it doesn't sound like you want to stay anywhere. You got the wanderlust. You got the itch still.
Still got it.
Still got it here after all these months here. Well, thanks for sharing. I look forward to seeing where you launch again. So for the next couple of weeks, it's going to be sort of a lower scale. The last question again. I mean, how do you go back to observing little things after you've seen big things? Is it just as exciting to see the beach in Argentina, which is probably like the beach in a lot of places you've already been, but it's probably beautiful? Or does it have to be, I've seen bigger beaches than that. I've seen bigger mountains than that. Oh, I've been to Antarctica.
I think the key there is trying not to play that comparison game, right? Because I think you'd hit the nail on the head there, right? If everything that you see, you're comparing to historical or something, or the best of something, right? And I feel like we tend to do that in our lives. Like, especially with social media, we see the top 10% of everybody else's life, and we can get down on ourselves because, oh, our life isn't like that, right? And so it's easy to try to compare our lives with the best of everything out there. But I feel like travel is the same way, right? We could absolutely find a reason to be dissatisfied wherever we go and say, oh, this isn't Bariloche. Like, oh, this isn't Antarctica, right? This isn't like those bucket list locations. But being able to view it with fresh eyes and just be present for it, right? I mean, that was, yeah. I said that earlier, just being being here in the right now and seeing it for the right now, I think is critical there.
Because it's all different.
Yeah, I think back to our friends that we met on the boat, Andrew and Jason, the National Geographic explorers, and asking like, well, how do you do that transition? And I really feel like, especially for them who they travel professionally, like their job is to see the world.
And to find the extraordinary. National Geographic doesn't want to see an ordinary picture. They want to see an extraordinary picture. So you got to be always looking.
Their job is to hunt for the extraordinary.
Right.
But also just talking to them and recognizing, like, as a result, I feel like Andrew especially strikes me as like coming to appreciate the little things, like knitting, like your dogs back home, like just having that, recognizing that it's like eating so much rich food. Yeah. Like eventually just salad sounds really fantastic after you've had a whole bunch of butter and sugar and chocolate and wine. You're like, oh, I just want some raw vegetables, you know?
Right.
And so I think it just reminds me that our job is not to discover new places. Our job is to discover new eyes. Mm. And just keeping our eyes open so that we can see and appreciate and value correctly the little things, which are as much a part of life, if not more, than the grandiose visions.
Well, leave it right there. You said it perfectly. And I'll only add one thing. It isn't just how you see it. It's what you hear in the world and the stories that you'll tell us and each other for the rest of your lives here. I look forward to hearing those stories, hearing a set of fresh ears that not only brings us to places and spaces we've never seen before, but brings us maybe through that an understanding. I think that's what we're getting here, an understanding of who we are and what we really want and where we're really headed, what this is all about. That's what stories do for us here. Well, thanks for sharing. We look forward to a couple of weeks of kind of some, you know, exploration here. I'm not sure where we're going here. And that seems kind of exciting because I wasn't sure where we were going when we started this whole thing. I sure as heck aren't sure where we're going now. So as you wander around for a while and then as you wander home, but you can't go to your home, you have to go to a nearby, you know, rented home in your own native land. That'll be strange too, to see how you react to all of that.
I love it.
Okay. Well, we love being with you. Thanks for taking us out. Is there anything you've learned, any words of to say, anything you can say in Spanish or in the native languages here that will take us out? Or
it's funny you mentioned that we've been being taught Argentinian, which is very different than Spanish here by our Argentinian friends. And of course, there's the Feliz Navidad.
Right.
But they tend to drop their Z, so it's Feliz Navidad. and then the double L or the Y sound is a sh. So we've been learning how to speak Argentinian. And one of those expressions is que lindo or re lindo, which just is like how beautiful or how adorable or how cute. Like, it's just a whole bunch of stuff. And, there was a woman when we were hiking and she asked me a question in Spanish and I didn't really know, but it seemed like she was asking like, how's the view that I was just walking back from. And I was like, oh, re lindo. And then like this flood of Argentinian Spanish comes shooting out at me and I'm like, oh, there are downsides to using colloquial expressions and pretending I know what I'm saying.
You know it all.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, we'll let you pretend. I like that image. So we'll leave it there. It's been Rayindo? Ralindo? I can't even say.
Relindo.
Relindo. All right. That's where we'll leave it there. It's really been Relindo so far here. And I look forward to a lot more Relindo in 2022. Thanks. Well, there you have it. One more reason. Put a date on your calendar. Join us each and every week as we follow the Domner family all over the world in search of their forever home. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, www.ushuaia.net.